Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. If you're watching this on YouTube, a comment would be great. And if you're listening to the podcast, a review would be great as well. Today, my guest is John Chen. So how did a guy who once worked as a program manager end up being a producer of virtual meetings? Well, let's find out. So welcome to Teach the Geek Interviews, John.
Thanks for having me, Neil. Yeah, you want to hear the story?
Oh yeah, I want to hear all about it. But from the bit of research I did on you, I saw that you studied computer science in school. So what was the motivation to do that?
Let's see. Well, I went to UC Santa Barbara, so that makes me a gaucho. A gaucho is an Australian cowboy, for those who don't know. And I went to UCSB, and I was undeclared for 3 years, and it was great, Neil. Like, I would meet somebody, and for instance, let's say it was a she, and she goes, "What's your major?" And I would say, "Undeclared." I said, "What's your major?" And she would say, "Undeclared." And I said, "Me too. We have so much in common." But eventually, they sent letters from the university saying, "John, you got to pick a major." And I looked at like a couple major things: philosophy, math, some other thing, maybe mechanical engineering. And in the end, I really looked at computer science, right? I didn't like math. It's all, proofs and nothing in the real world. And I eventually got to computer science because it had that, what I love to call, instant gratification. You write code, you compile it, it runs or it doesn't, and it gives you immediate feedback. So I really got addicted to programming. And so that's how I got into computer science. I became the president of the Engineering Student Council, as well as ACM, or the Association of Computing Machinery. Was voted the most outstanding computer science student when I left and got hired into our good friends at Microsoft in Redmond, Washington. So that's how I got into computer science.
Oh, wow. Well, Australian cowboys in Santa Barbara. Who would have thought?
Well, Neil, too, the funny part is that my real dream was I was going to be a professional skateboarder. And I got halfway there. I got to sponsored amateur. If you have ever seen the movie Dogtown and Z Boys, I was two teams after the team that was depicted in the movie. And so I was ready to do that until I blew my left knee's ACLs. And then it was change careers.
Wow. Imagine that. So you mentioned that when you were done school, you ended up at Microsoft. What kind of work did you do there?
So at Microsoft, I spent 10 years. I shipped 10 products I bet you didn't know this program, Neil. Let's test your trivia. Did you know that Microsoft created a program called LAN Manager for Unix?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because there was like 8 people on the team. We collaborated with both SCO or Santa Cruz Unix and AT&T's Unix. But that's how I cut some of my early networking chops, then got into the Landman team or the Land Manager team, and eventually hit Workgroup Applications, which shipped Exchange 4.0, which actually was a 1.0 product. It was the first product that Microsoft put out as a client-server email program. And that program went on to sell 250 million client licenses, Neil.
Oh, wow.
And I got 2 U.S. patents for the process for 2 unique things that we created for that to make sure that it was a well-performing program.
Okay, that's pretty cool. But I mean, at some point you stopped doing that and you eventually went off on your own. What was the motivation to do that?
Well, Neil, I don't know about you, but I've had this saying in my life and it says, "I always knew I was supposed to do something. I just don't know what it is." Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so I said that, and out of the thousands of people that I said that to, most people go, "Yeah, me too. I don't know who I want to be when I grow up." But there's one guy, I actually spent time with that Tony Robbins guy, right? Do you know who Tony Robbins is?
Yes.
Yeah, big guy with teeth, motivational guy. I was at his conference, and I was actually volunteering with another gentleman who was the leader of the team. I was like a coach. There's 2 coaches and a trainer with every team as in part of those big events. And it was him. I said that same phrase to him. I don't know what I want to, you know, do. I know I'm supposed to do something. I don't know what it is. He's the only person, Neil, in the world who said, give me a weekend and I'll tell you exactly what it is. Okay. Now, that's an enticing offer, right, Neil?
Yeah, indeed.
So it cost me some money and some time, but I had both at the time. I flew to Huntington Beach and I wrote the entire business plan for this company, Neil, in 48 hours.
Wow. What was the company and what was the plan?
Right. Do you remember Jerry Maguire?
Yeah.
Yeah. When he writes the manifesto and he's sweating and then he hands out like, you know, 60 of them in the box.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was like that. The original company name was Playtime Incorporated. It was Play because I really wanted to do something that was fun, right? Like in life, if it's not fun, you're probably doing it wrong. And the second part was that the Incorporated says, but it's about business. It's not just fun, right? It's about fun with a purpose. And so I really started out with that, and it transformed from Playtime Incorporated to geoteaming. Do you know what geocaching is, Neil?
I don't.
Geocaching is a high-tech scavenger hunt where you use billions of dollars of satellites for the global positioning system to find hidden containers around the world. So it's like a massive high-tech scavenger hunt. And I turned it into a team-building and leadership event. So I teach team and leadership skills by having these high-tech scavenger hunts in cities all around the world. Barcelona, Taiwan, Shanghai, Marseille, France, right? Miami. So I had a whole career in that. And then, of course, this pandemic thing happened. And I'll share in a moment the story, if you'd like, about how I became Engaging Virtual Meetings. That's my current company. Geoteaming still exists, but Engaging Virtual Meetings is now my current primary company.
Okay. But when it comes to the Playtime Incorporated, which eventually became Geoteaming, where did you even get the idea for implementing play in corporate settings?
Oh, well, I fell in love with what I call experiential learning, which is learning by doing. And it was kind of part of Tony Robbins' bit, right? And other places have done it, where you do something, right, to learn a point, as opposed to, for me, just like lecturing you and telling you, right, be a better person, Neil. Right? Which, I don't know, is there anything actionable in that? I don't know. But for instance, they use something called a pamper pole. It's a 50-foot pole, Neil. And you're in a harness. You have to climb up the pole. And that might be terrifying for some people. But the hardest part is at the top of the pole, you have to figure out how to stand on top of the telephone pole. And if you have never been on top of a 50-foot telephone pole, and Neil's probably going, I don't think I need to be on top of a 50-foot telephone pole, it starts moving because it's so big. Right, it's wavering in like the wind with your weight. And what I discovered in my lesson around it is that they have one on the ground, Neil. Right? That's like this 6 foot, you know, 6 inches off the ground, and all you do is step up, and that seems easy. But when you're 50 feet high, your brain thinks it's really, really hard. And in the end, what you need to do is learn how to step up, and you can't hold on to anything while your hands want to hold on to the pole for stability. In the end, what you need to do is put your foot on it and then step up on the other one. And if you do that, you'll stand tall. And once you stand tall on the pole, like, to me, the whole world just like came into alignment, and it said, I'm not going to fall. And the lessons that I got from it is number one is step up. Right. Like it's always scary to step up. But if you just step up, right, you can stand. And even if you fall, you had a harness on. You're not going to die, for crying out loud. Right. So just try it. But the fear is, again, that first step, getting to it. If you ever do it, you'll maybe understand what I'm talking about. But once you stand on the top, then again, like the whole planet like aligns. And what that says to me as the lesson I got from it is when you're doing the thing that you are meant to do. Right, the whole universe will align with you. And that's been my last 27 years.
Okay. You know, when I started Teach the Geek, it started off as a course for technical people, and it was called Teach the Geek to Speak. And I didn't do a whole lot of research as to whether the technical people wanted a course called Teach the Geek to Speak. Luckily, it seemed to have worked out okay. That was a few years ago. But when we first put your business together, was it ever a concern that Is this even something that people want?
Oh yeah. I mean, I spent 2.5 years doing it part-time while at Microsoft, so I could convince myself that it was a real business. And one of the best things is that my coach actually took me to a ropes course in LA. And we went to the ropes course and talked to he arranged for me to talk to the owner. And it turned out the owner wasn't even passionate around it. He was really passionate about paragliding. But he was using the ropes course to pay for his paragliding habit. And we went through and said, here's all the amazing things. And we even came up with easily 150 things we thought we could do better, right? Make it even better. And that experience led me to say I could do this. And so again, for 2.5 years, I did some about 12 hours a week was the goal. 10 to 12 hours a week is the goal. And that was one of the other coach's principle he gave me. It's like, if you want to start a new life, if you can dedicate 12 hours a week to building, to working on your business, not in your business, on your business, then you can be successful. And so in that 2.5 years, I organized my life so I could leave Microsoft, a big company, and then do my own thing full time. And I started with this gigantic program. I actually did my company in reverse, Neil. I did the biggest program I could think of first. It was a 9-month coaching class where 6 months into the class, 23 people attempt to summit 14,410 foot Mount Rainier with me. Talk about learning by doing. This blew people away. And they suddenly realized too, right? If you've never climbed Mount Rainier, Neil, it turns into a life or death game. I mean, you need to, people have died on Rainier. And if you follow our principles, we went with professional guides. You won't die, right? The odds of you dying are very, very little, but the risk is there. And that risk and being out in nature, and then the way I designed the program, which said you don't need to stand on the summit, right? The summit, the Mount Rainier only has one summit at 14,410 feet. But I said the goal of the class is to stand on your summit. And your summit is wherever it is. Some people, it was like 2 steps out of the door, but that was it. And like one woman's back gave out. She was disappointed, but she ended up having a totally other, different, amazing experience because she got to stay in our high-end retreat resort for 2 days while we were struggling on the mountain. And she said it was amazing, you know? And then some of my other people, one of my good friends, Mitch Simon in San Diego, he summited the mountain. He did the work. He got to the top. 4 years later, Neil, he calls me. And he goes, John, I want to tell you something. I'm like, okay, cool. Go ahead, Mitch. And he goes, I just want to let you know, like 2 months ago, that my employer fired me in a way I didn't like. And I want to let you know that most of the time prior to this, I would have spent my whole life pissed off about that. But I just want to let you know that because I went through your course and climbed to the summit of Mount Rainier, I looked at it as a gift. He started his own coaching business, Neil. He is one of the top 10 coaches in San Diego, top 10 executive coaches, and he's still doing it to this date. And he credits climbing Mount Rainier as one of the key aspects for starting a life and a career that he loves.
Nice. That's good. That's a great story. Yeah. You climb Mount Rainier, get fired, do something else. Why not?
It's just like coronavirus, right? Coronavirus has given a whole lot of gifts if you look really, really closely, right? Everyone else thought it sucked and was a dumpster fire. And it did suck, and it was a dumpster fire. And it was the best thing that ever happened to my business, Neil.
Yeah, you know what? That's so interesting you say that because a lot of people say the exact same thing. So now, the work that you do is with virtual events. So what got you into that, and what exactly do you do when it comes to producing virtual events?
Oh, hold on a second. I got to get something so I can show you, Neil, okay?
Okay.
So thanks for that, Neil. And virtual events, you know, has come such a long way in the last couple years. A Twilio report, research report said that IT advanced 7 years in the first year of the pandemic. And so let me just share, I'm going to share my last 3 years in 2 minutes. Okay, are you ready?
Sure.
Okay, so I'm John Chen. I'm the author of a book called Engaging Virtual Meetings. How did I get here? Well, I told you earlier, I had an illustrious team building career doing cool stuff around the world, face to face in Barcelona, Taiwan, Shanghai, Marseille, France. And then poof, this thing happened, right? This is a coronavirus. And of course, this is what my March of 2020 looked like. 15 canceled programs. As a small business, you know that basically this is catastrophic. And so one of my strategies, Neil, when dealing with uncertainty is look at the past. Now, do you know this thing? Do you know how, you know, OG, this technology is?
I don't.
This is a technology called Prodigy. It was the first graphical-based meeting space online at a time when modems used to make noise 37 years ago. This is, yeah. So I was on this, is basically what I'm trying to say. And then I wrote this book called 50 Digital Team Building Games in 2011. So for decades, Neil, I've been trying to tell people, we can do this. We can do meaningful work on virtual, save the travel and expenses, right? Neil, where are you today?
I'm in San Diego.
Oh my gosh. Oh, see, San Diego. You got to meet this. You got to meet Mitch sometime. He lives right there. So, and again, I would have to fly to you, but look at this. We can save the travel expenses and the carbon, right? And you can have dinner with your family and friends at the end of the day. But before March of 2020, everyone said, that's a great idea, John, but here's a bunch of money and you got to fly to Orlando, right? And so anyways, I'm sitting in my office. I don't make vaccines, but I do know how to make your virtual meeting better. So I put a class on Eventbrite called Virtual Team Building. And by the end of 2020, 5,000 people had taken this class. So my publisher came back and they said, hey, John, do you want to write your second book? And I said, sure. And they said, well, there's one thing, John, right? And what I feel like is the cruelest joke, Neil, that my publisher played on me. They said, we don't know how long this coronavirus thing's going to last, so will you rush the book? So, spoiler alert, my friend who dodged, right? He dodged for so long, got coronavirus last week. So it's still going on. And I wrote this book in 9 weeks. 9 weeks. And it hit the number one Amazon hot new release in October 2020. And now, Neil, I completely changed over my entire business in a year. I spend most of my time designing, producing, speaking at, and emceeing at virtual meetings. And these are some fun people that I worked at. This is Jay Bodasinga from The Walking Dead. This is Patrick Lencioni, 5 Dysfunctions of a Team. This is our good friend Damon John, who's from Shark Tank. I was his producer, made him look good. And this is Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote the book Eat, Pray, Love. Remember that book?
Yeah.
Yeah, 16 million copies and gave one of the best keynotes in the last three years, best virtual keynote. So, Neil, can I give you my number one tip for virtual speakers?
Oh, sure.
Here we go. So this is my number one tip. The tip is stand up. And it sounds simple, but the 4 famous people that I just showed you on the last screen all forgot this, that if you find a way to stand up while you're presenting, right? We're podcasting, so we could be sitting down. But if you were keynoting, I would suggest that you stand up and you can actually gain an advantage to be one of the top 20% of all the virtual speakers that I know about. And so now let me just show you what I did with the last of my 3 years, right? This is what's really going on here. This is your behind the scenes view, Neil. I built a studio here in Seattle, Washington with a gigantic green screen. But more importantly too, this is what's actually in front of my face every day is this much technology. Up to 14 screens is what I can use to present and to produce in a way that most other people can.
Good Lord, that's a lot of screens.
Good Lord.
Wow, that's impressive. Wow, that's pretty cool that the pandemic forced you to pivot into something different, and it turned out to be it worked out really well. So kudos to you, John.
Yeah, thank you. Again, the pandemic was one of the biggest catalysts of change. And the whole piece that, Neil, is that it's your choice. Was it good change or bad change?
Yeah, it's going to be changed. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Whether it's going to be good or bad, that is dependent on how you looked at the situation for sure, and then also the actions you took based on the fact that we were all dealing with this coronavirus. 100%. So when it comes to when it comes to speaking in front of people, just public speaking generally, John, is that something you've always been good at? And if not, what did you do to get better at it?
Oh, I just talked about this in another podcast. I started speaking that I can remember in the third grade because I ran for class president and you have to give a speech. And I remember going up to give that speech and being nervous, hands sweaty, heart pulsating, stomach churning, you know? And I still gave the speech and I actually won. But I also shared that I'm an adrenaline junkie. I've been skydiving, right? I used to be a skateboarder. I do snowboarding, right? All these other things. And speaking has got to be one of the biggest adrenaline rushes of all time. So I kind of gravitated towards it. So over the years, I really did work on my speaking skills. And actually, recently, I was voted in as the president-elect for the National Speakers Association, the Northwest chapter here in Seattle. And I am currently in the third stage of becoming a certified speaking professional, which only 17% of the NSA membership has received this designation. So I've worked really hard on my speaking skills. And the other place that I worked on my speaking skills, Neil, was team building, right? As a team builder, you're in front of the group. And I've also feel like I've learned something special that not just speaking, but facilitation, right? Facilitation, the core of the word means to make easier. And facilitation means that I don't have a script, right? Like right now, I'm not reading a teleprompter, I'm not scripting. And in a team building course, my job is to react to what's happening in the team building course to make it them easier to learn a team or a leadership principle. And so that's what I've really developed over the years is the ability to talk off the cuff and improv. I got to tell you, for if you want to become a better facilitator, take an improv class. Improv to me is something that has really helped me become a better and more present speaker. So as people know that what I'm saying again, not scripted and comes from the heart and is something that's happening that right now, as authentic as I can be in the moment.
Do you ever get nervous before giving a presentation, John? And if
Oh
so,
yeah.
how do you deal with your nerves?
Oh yeah. I still get nervous and now I've trained myself, Neil, to be excited about being nervous. And the reason is going, "Oh, this something's different about this speaking gig." Right? That I'm nervous. So there's something here. And one of the best things that another speaker trained me on, the difference between nervous and excited is how you breathe. So if you're nervous or you're afraid, you panic breathe, you short breathe from your chest. Right? But if you can turn that breathing into long diaphragmatic breathing, you turn all that energy into excited. And then when you can do that, you can take that excited energy and give it to the group. And I think the one other thing that really changed my speaking is for most bad speakers, if you ask them enough questions, you'll find out they're focusing entirely on themselves, right? I'm worried about what people look at me, what they're judging how I look, right? Do I have chives in my tooth? Is my voice too high and squeaky? Instead of, if you ask all the great speakers, the number one thing they're focusing on is how can I serve this group? What can I give? What can I teach them? What can I enlighten them about? And I think that one piece will transform your speaking part because you focus on them, not on you. In the end, you'll find out, even though you're on stage, it's not about you. It's about everybody in the audience. And if they like it, then they applaud, right? Or they'll thank you afterwards. But those are the things that have really, really helped me.
I agree with you. That's an interesting point about the difference in breathing from nervous to excited. I think you're right. Yeah, when you're nervous, yeah, it's a whole lot of short breathing. Then you pass out, and you don't want to do that. You want to deep breathe, so you stay upright. You know, that's the number one rule of public speaking. Unless you're speaking lying down, you want to stay upright. I think that's beneficial to everybody involved. So when it comes to the people who are watching this interview or watching this conversation or listening to the podcast, If you were to offer one tip to become more effective at public speaking or giving presentations, what would it be, John?
I ask this to all my clients, and I do coach some people on virtual speaking. And the number one question to answer is to ask, what do you want? From you being the speaker at this event, what do you want to have happen? How do you want the audience to feel? And if you do that and correctly identify that, everything else, like when I design a talk, goes into that. And I look at it, like when I get confused, oh, I don't know if I should run a poll here or do a chat. In the end, I go back and say, what's the goal? Right? Let's say my goal is like I actually do a lot of DEI speaking for Asian Pacific Islanders. So maybe my goal is to educate them about what it's like to be an Asian Pacific Islander if they're not in this country. So how can I give them that experience? Right? And then it would tell me, is a chat or poll? Maybe it's neither of those things. A chat or not, it's neither of those things. What if I played an impactful video or shared a story at that stage instead? Would that be better? And so everything that I do guides around that. Speakers should look at that, because if you ever get confused, and we do. When we design, we want to put 10 pounds of stuff in a 5 pound bag in 45 minutes or 18 or whatever you have. And in the end, sometimes less is more. And if you ask, what do you want, then you'll look and saying, sometimes the best thing for the impact is to put silence in some pieces of here, right? To let something really sit and create that impact. And that way you can deliver on what you think you want.
This has been a great conversation, John. Thank you so much for being a guest. How can people get in touch with you?
Just go to my website, engagingvirtualmeetings.com, and I'd love to invite you, Neil. October 1 through 3, I'm hosting my 5th annual Engaging Conference. There is a free ticket as well as some paid tickets. We're running hybrid for the very first time. If you want to see all of our cool stuff in action, that is the place to be.
Excellent. Well, everyone, that marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And if you want to learn more about that, you can go to teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe. Thanks, John.
See ya.
Well, everyone, that marks another episode in the can. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these episodes and want to support Teach the Geek, please subscribe, share, and like on any of your favorite podcast platforms, or on all of them. Also, if you prefer to watch the episodes, head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.teachthegeek.com. Until next time.